This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning together with Shazana Mukhtar. It is 7:07 Wednesday, the 6th of July. And in a half an hour, we're going to discuss the outlook for the Singapore property market. But in the meantime, let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
Well, if we take a look, U.S. markets were mostly in the green. The Dow was down 0.4%, but the S&P 500 up 0.2% and the Nasdaq up 1.8%. Meanwhile, over in Asia, a mixed bag. The Nikkei was up 1%. Hang Seng was up 0.1%. Shanghai Composite down 0.04%. STI down 0.5%. FBM KLCI up 0.2%.
Yeah, in fact, actually in the US, it was a very volatile trading day. S&P 500 at the lows was actually down more than 2%. But within the last 30 minutes of trading, actually the market managed to recover and earn on a positive note. So to help us understand where markets are heading, we speak to Jack Kuzi, Director for Strategy at VFS Group. Good morning, Jack. As usual, always nice to speak to you. Now, I think clearly someone knew you were coming on because the tech-heavy Nasdaq is up by 1.5%. Jack, tell us what's happening. Is value starting to emerge?
Yeah, I mean, like you said before I came on, it was an interesting session. And like you said, the S&P was way down and we saw a massive move into the market. I mean, you know, there's some value buying here. I mean, if we look at sell downs previously, in the last three major sell downs that we've had, this has kind of been a little bit of a different sell down. So if we go back to the COVID period, we saw the market move 40% in essentially 4 to 5 weeks. The period before that, in 2019, we saw the market move down 20% in a period of 6 or 7 weeks. This has been a 22% move down on the S&P 500 from top to bottom over a six-month period. So it's been a gradual move down. I think people are starting to see some value here, particularly in some of these beaten-up tech names. I think what the market is also considering is that we are in the midst of or going into a big earnings period, and maybe some of these high-growth names are beaten down a little bit more than they should have, and we're expecting some, you know, some expectations beats and some downgrades in terms of what's going on forward. But when you look at valuations and you marry them up, there could be some value here. So look, one session doesn't necessarily make a market, but it was good to see the rebound that we saw in tech stocks, particularly considering, you know, how heavily tech invested I am for myself and my clients.
And Jack, maybe we can zoom out and just look at the broader picture. I mean, we see this economic slowdown spilling over to all corners of the world. When it comes to Southeast Asia, do you think we're in a better or worse position compared to the US and Europe in avoiding a recession or even a stagflation this year?
Yeah, I mean, let's look at the three major issues that the world is facing at the moment. I mean, the first one is obviously inflation. And while there are inflationary hot pockets within the Southeast Asian region, when you compare them to its European and Western or the US counterparts, it isn't as bad as possible. So, for example, if you take China, you know, their inflation is, you know, considerably under control and they are actually in an easing period. Take the other big nation out there in terms of India. I mean, they're forecasting 7.7 to 8% economic growth over the next year period, which should have flow-on effects to that other region. The other area I think that Southeast Asia, you know, is in a better situation, if you look at the global logistics situation that's going on, that's, you know, occurring all around the world and you know, contributing to slower economic growth and higher inflation, well, they're positioned well because they're a major manufacturing hub. So they don't have to send things as far as, you know, the US or the UK or Canada or Europe. So that should bode them well in that environment. And then if you look at interest rates relatively to where they are compared to, again, the US and Europe, well, they were relatively higher than they were to their counterparts. So they do have some leverage in terms of bringing them down as long as they can get that inflationary period under control. So I think the two major economies there in terms of China and India are starting to show some pockets, particularly India, which is growing very, very well. It does have an inflationary problem, but I think they are going to start to get that under control. So I think this could be a region of the world which could outperform. And if you've looked at the last 2 to 3 months and you compare, you know, the MSCI Asia Index and you compare that to the US or Europe, it has significantly outperformed. during that period. So I think it's going to continue, and it does have a lot of things going for it, primarily that global logistics issue, because most of the world's great things are actually made in Asia and shipped out of Asia, and that will benefit them going forward.
Okay, Jack, I want to talk about China because we do see cases of COVID, sporadic cases of COVID, rising in certain regions, especially in the tech region like Jiangsu, so where key components for Apple products are made. Now, we know China is still very committed to this zero COVID policy. So how severe will the impact likely be on these tech stocks?
Yeah, I mean, I just got to ask the question before I get into that is why are they still committed to this zero COVID policy? And I actually don't have the answer. You know, the Chinese have said that they believe stop starting, opening up and closing up because of COVID isn't necessarily in the best interest of economic growth and their manufacturing base there in China. But that necessarily hasn't worked in the last year. And it'll be interesting to see going forward whether they continue to, you know, pursue this zero COVID policy. It makes me think, do the Chinese know something that we don't about COVID? So that's an interesting point. If you want to talk about manufacturing bases being moved out of China, to be honest with you, that was kind of happening pre-COVID. You know, we even saw, if you look at China, it's had the highest wage growth of any other region in the world. And that's because it's, you know, growing in terms of its wealth. And they were actually moving some of their manufacturing bases outside of China into areas like Vietnam, Sri Lanka, you know, some pockets of India. So we already saw that by the Chinese as a precursor to keep those production costs down. Yeah, that may be a consideration. I think what the Chinese have done over the last 3 to 5 years is they've invested heavily in technology in their manufacturing bases. So if you look at the age of robotics, you know, we often talk about robots and things like that, and we think about the Terminator. I mean, the robotics innovation is about the manufacturing base, you know, robots doing one thing, going up and down or helping in that. And they've invested very heavily in upgrading their manufacturing base and also investing in companies to make the robots of the future for their manufacturing base. I'll give you a perfect example. In 2017-18, a major company there, Media, acquired a company called Cuckoo out of Germany, which was a robotics firm. You know, it was a big deal. It was almost disapproved by the EU. So they're investing in the factories of the future, and they've done that more than any other country in the world, which will hold them in good stead. But yes, this is a bit of a dark cloud over them at the moment, and the question on how they navigate it. But you know, I still believe the Chinese are looking towards advanced manufacturing. You know, they don't want to make balloons and you know, toys anymore. They want to be the manufacturing base for advanced economy, and they're well on their way. And I think that'll hold them in good stead going forward in the future.
Jack, can we turn our attention to Australia? Australian auction clearance rates are at 2-year lows. Now, with another 50 basis point rate hike by the RBA, do you see this as the death knell for the Aussie property sector?
Yeah, it's the house of cards, actually. It's an interesting point that you make. You look at clearance rates, they're at 2-year lows. We're starting to really feel it. And, you know, Australians feel wealthy because their property prices have gone up. It's been one of the best performing property markets around the world. And the issue is now we had our interest rate hike last night. We are one of the most indebted countries in the world. When you look at household to GDP ratio, then, you know, we are in a plane amongst ourselves. And the issue here is mum and dad, middle-class Australians, not only own their own, you know, house, they own one or two investment properties. And we're starting to see the labour market start to saturate a little bit. And that is the big issue that we're facing. And we feel wealthy because our property prices have gone up. And if they start to go down, which they are starting to see, then we don't feel as wealthy and we don't spend as much. And we have this infallible belief in Australia that property prices cannot go down.
Well, you are the lucky country, aren't you, Jack?
We are the lucky country. That's right. And I just don't think we're going to be lucky over the next 3 to 5 year period. And inflation is out of control. There's no doubt. I mean, our retail, you know, wage growth has been incredible. We have a very tight labor market in some sectors. And the RBA and our central bank has been behind the eight ball. And I think we're going to suffer before that. And I think the property market is a house of cards waiting to fall. I truly believe that.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Jack Kuzi, Director for Strategy at VFS Group, warning us that the property market in Australia is like a house of cards and you never really know whether it's all going to fall. What has caught our eye in terms of falling has been oil prices. I'm looking at Bloomberg at the moment. Brent crude, $102, down 9%, while WTI is actually recovered somewhat. It's up 1.29%, but still hovering at $100, far cry from the $130 that we saw earlier in the year.
I mean, I think we've even seen Citi warn that Brent could actually fall to $65 by the end of the year if a demand crippling recession hits. So it's all these fears about a recession that's starting to crimp demand, even amidst tight supply. Earlier in the year, we were talking about how, oh, there's not enough supply. But now, hey, demand is kind of taking a hit because of these recession fears.
Yeah, so there's clearly demand destruction. You know, I think analysts were forecasting $150, $160 per barrel. Now they're all revising those targets. But we'll be watching this space very closely. Up next, we'll discuss the feasibility of a four-day work week for Malaysian businesses. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.